In their New York Times bestseller, Half the Sky, husband and wife team Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun brought to life struggles faced by women and girls around the globe and showcased individuals and institutions working to address oppression and expand opportunity. In their latest book, now out in paperback, A Path Appears, they present a tapestry of people who are making the world a better place. The book is also a guide to the ways that we can do the same, whether with a donation of $5 or $5 million, with our time, by capitalizing on our skills as individuals, or by using the resources of our businesses. Kristof and Wudun have co-authored three previous books, including Thunder from the East and China Wakes. They were awarded a Pulitzer Prize in 1990 for their coverage of China and the Dayton Literary Peace Prize for Lifetime Achievement in 2009. The Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy will host a breakfast with Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun on Thursday, October 29th in Albany. We spoke with Kristof in September of last year, when the book first came out, about how he and Wudun came to further explore the issues around inequality.
There is obviously tremendous interest in the issue of inequality in the country, and there's broad recognition that we have a problem when the top 1% own more than the bottom 90%, but there's also real frustration with, how we deal with that, and there is a lot less agreement that whether the problem should be, inequality of outcomes or inequality of opportunity. But there really is, I think, some consensus that when people have a different starting line, different degree of opportunity, that is a broad national crisis. And it struck us that there is a lot of evidence now about how we can create that opportunity in ways where there is consensus to try to begin to make change. And so that was really what led us to A Path Appears. There just seems to us that there's been, over the last 15 or 20 years, really tremendous research from brain science, from randomized controlled trials or different experiments, even from animal studies about what kind of interventions will put kids on the right track so that one can invest to the front end and, invest a little bit later, years later, in all kinds of social injustices.
This is a very optimistic book because we meet so many people that really are making a difference in the world, and I assume throughout your work of looking at many of the world's problems that you come across these people and they become great rays of light for you.
Yeah, absolutely. People, because I tend to report about a lot of injustices, genocide, all kinds of abuses, so people tend to think that I'm this sort of morose, grim pessimist. And actually, I am something of an optimist because in my reporting career, I really have seen great progress. And we in journalism often focus on the planes that crash. But the truth is there are a lot of planes that are taking off all the time. And, that when I first traveled in Africa as a law student, the thing that really struck me was the number of people who were blind from river blindness or from trachoma, in middle age and having to go around and beg and often to take a grandchild or child out of school to lead them around. And it just was, so horrifying to see this all over. And now river blindness is fairly easily treated. It's a shadow of what it was. Trachoma is much less common. For 25 cents a year, one can eradicate trachoma in an area. And so, you go around, you don't see people going blind in the same way anymore. And so on the one hand, there's this a great deal of progress. And likewise in child mortality or in literacy. And yet it's frustrating because we do now have the toolkit, and yet there are still so many people who aren't getting access to that toolkit.
You do two things in the book that I find fascinating, and I want to get into some of the individuals that you talk about. But you talk about how really each of us can make a difference in what we can do. But you also do something else much deeper, is to see that in doing that thing, of the results that we can see and realize that there has been some difference in the world, of what we gain in return.
Yeah, so they're kind of the twin issues. And I think first there's some skepticism about whether an individual can really make a difference. And, you know, we know that there are corruption issues, that there are charities that waste money or that are frauds. And of course, all that is true. But if the question is, can an individual make a difference? You know, boy, I've just seen it all over. And in the Path Appears, we trace in particular a woman in California who had a disability, a childhood deformity called clubfoot. And in the U.S., it's treated immediately at birth. In fact, when we were writing the book, I discovered it the first time that my mom had clubfoot, which I'd never even known. But because she'd had it and then been cured and indeed had been an athlete, so she responded to a mailing and wrote a check for $250 to an organization that addresses clubfoot in the developing world. And we followed the money. It went to Niger and to a hospital there. And we met a little girl named Rashida, who was from a village where in the past kids with clubfoot were not treated. They were crippled. They were unable to walk. They couldn't go to school. They ended up as beggars. And that $250 was enough to repair Rashida's clubfoot. And she will now live a normal life. She'll get an education. She'll be productive in a way that will be completely transformative for Rashida. And the idea that you can have that much impact for what is really a fairly modest amount of money, I think, is incredibly heartening. And we give a lot of examples of that. And then, as you say, the other side of the coin is that there's also, you know, tremendous satisfaction that we gain ourselves. And the brain science on this is just fascinating. There are the pleasure, various pleasure centers in the brain. And people, there are researchers who study how they light up in brain scans when people are getting money, which kind of makes sense, but they also light up when you make a donation to a charity that you believe in. And indeed, Cheryl and I had our brain scanned as we were getting money and as we were giving it away. And you can, you know, there's now this sort of neuroscientific evidence of that giving can be as blessed as receiving.
You have a chapter in the book called A Giving Code. It's toward the end of the book, and you say that although neuroscience suggests that humans are hardwired to care and to help, many of us do not, and you give some of the reasons why that is the case. And it's a beautiful, lengthy chapter, but in a nutshell, what do you think the giving code for us should be?
I guess what we encourage people to do is to find a cause that is meaningful to you, and that maybe because of something in your own past, as it was for this woman who had clubfoot as a child, you know, for some people it's going to be education, for others it's going to be women's rights, economic empowerment, whatever it may be, but some cause that you really believe in, and then narrow your giving. Don't fire off a bunch of small checks to a bunch of people, but try to do it more like an investment, and try to really have an impact with that. I think too often we give to those who ask. So we get a phone call from some marketing company, and you know the word veterans is mentioned, or childhood cancer, and we feel guilty, and we write a small check. And we're so much better off if we don't just give to those who ask, but really do a little bit of research as if we were buying a stock. And these days, in contrast to 15 years ago, we have evidence about what works, about what organizations are more impactful. And if we follow that kind of evidence, and that's what the book is about, then I think we can help change the world just a little bit and have an incredible impact on people's lives.
This is the fourth book that you have written with your wife, Cheryl Woodun, and I'm curious as to how that journalistic partnership came to be of finding your footing of working as a team.
You know, people always sort of think that they always ask, you know, how do you write a book with your spouse? and they sort of assume that, you know, we're throwing plates at each other. And the truth is that if you can raise kids together, and we have three kids, and if you can survive that, boy, preparing a book together is so much easier. You can put a book to bed at night, and it stays there. A book doesn't play you off each other. And the stakes are lower. So we managed to do four books together, and it's a real joy to share issues that we care about. Sometimes there are some bruised feelings when we edit each other's chapters, but certainly the book ends up the better for it.
Do you think the reader, especially since you both have separate careers as well, do you think the reader realizes who's writing what at any given time, or don't you want that?
In some of our previous books, we had individual chapters that would be marked as, by Nick or by
right.
Cheryl.
Right.
This time, and for our last book, Half the Sky, we did not do that. And some readers say that they can tell Cheryl is, in general, more interested in business. And so I don't know if this is a top secret that I'm giving out, but those chapters here that are more about how one uses enterprise solutions to address poverty, how one, how there are for-profit companies that can make a difference. Those would be more likely to be by Cheryl, while, some other areas, especially involving overseas travel, might be more likely to be by me.
Well, the book is A Path Appears, Transforming Lives, Creating Opportunity. It is published by Knopf. Nicholas Kristof, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to the visit.
Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudahn's new book is A Path Appears. It is out in paperback from Random House. The Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy will host a breakfast with Kristof and Wudahn on Thursday, October 29th in Albany. You can find out more by going to their website, scaany.org, scaany.org. And we'll talk with Kate Breslin, President and CEO of the Schuyler Center, in our next hour. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.